produced by the iLab at WBUR, Boston.
Hey, listeners. So today's episode is actually about eating disorders. So if this is a topic that you find upsetting, we just wanted to let you know right at the beginning of the show.
And if you think that you have an eating disorder, or maybe you know someone who does, please contact the National Eating Disorders Association online at nationaleatingdisorders.org.
So, Eddie, do you remember back on the first episode of the podcast we talked about my freshman year of college? Well, a lot of people go to college and maybe they start drinking, maybe they do drugs, maybe they do both. I went to college and I developed an eating disorder.
Oh, you know, I'm so sorry. You know that I'm not an eating disorder specialist, but I also know that you're not alone. And I think that we could probably find some experts to talk this through.
I think that's a really good idea because I know we joke around a lot, but this is definitely something I've really struggled with.
You know, I have heard of food being referred to as the good girl's drug.
This is Jenny Thomas. She's an associate professor at Harvard Med.
And the co-director of the Eating Disorders Clinical and Research Program at Mass General Hospital in Boston.
She says food is like a good girl's drug because some people turn to it to rebel or to deal with their emotions. So think of those times when you're stressed and you reach for the cookies or reach for the chocolate.
Is highly accessible in our society. It's not illegal. A lot of people attribute food with love and think of it as something that's happy and celebratory. So I think there are a lot of reasons that people might kind of start picking it up.
I'm Yuna Jada.
And I'm Dr. Eddie Phillips. And this is Food, We Need to Talk.
And as we mentioned today, we're talking about eating disorders.
This is actually a very serious issue. And we've spent a lot of time talking about what to eat, what not to eat, and our relationship with food. But today I thought we should do a little bit more of a deep dive into when maybe you tip over the line and getting into an eating disorder and what you can do about it.
Eating disorders are definitely not a laughing matter because I know for me, it's been one of like the biggest sources of distress in the past 6 years of my life.
Where did it start for you, Yuna?
I attribute my eating disorder personally to peanuts.
Really?
Well, as I said on the first episode, I spent basically my entire freshman year super low calorie. So like sub 1200 calories.
Wow.
And working out twice a day.
So, Yuna, I think I should stop here for a minute. Just say 1,200 calories a day is not a lot of energy, especially if you're so physically active. But I also noticed that if you go on a calorie counting app, they all seem to default to 1,200 calories a day. But if you're generally healthy and you want to get enough nutrients and enough energy, you probably need 1,800 to 2,400 calories a day.
So that's part of the problem because I would get to the end of the day and I would just be so hungry.
And then what would happen?
And then I'd be sitting at my desk and I'd open it and inside was a box of mini packs of peanuts, which my mom had bought for me because I'd complained about how bad the food was at school.
But so the nuts, they're a great snack. It's a good source of healthy fat. What's the problem?
They may be when you're having like one handful, but basically I would be sitting at my desk and I would blink and the next thing I'd know, I'd have a pile of wrappers around me and I'd be so angry and so ashamed of what I'd done.
A lot of us overeat sometimes.
But like, it's not really the same thing because this was something I had no control over, it felt like. Like I would blink and then 10 packs of nuts would be surrounding me on the table.
Yeah, I mean, I think binge eating can almost be seen as like being in an alternate universe with food. A lot of people who engage in binge eating also are engaging in restrictive eating. So oftentimes somebody, you know, will go all day trying to follow certain rules about their eating. So to say, you know, no carbs or no sugar or I can't have sweets or I can't eat processed foods. And so not only are they hungry, but they're like psychologically depleted from trying to self-regulate all day and try to say no to all of these cues.
Yeah, so this was definitely me. I would be sitting at my desk at the end of the day, hungry, tired, psychologically drained, and then I might say something to myself like,
okay, well, maybe I'll have this one bite of bread while I'm cooking dinner, or, oh, you know, I'm so hungry, I'll just have this one chip.
And at that point, it is game over.
I ruined this entire day. There's no way that it can be perfect now, and so I might as well just let myself binge.
I would eat more in that hour than I would have eaten for 5 days total. You know what I mean? And then it's like, why did I torture myself for 5 days to just undo it?
So, you know, let's summarize the kind of eating disorders that we're talking about. The most common is what you've described so far, which is this binge eating disorder. And that's actually somewhat prevalent, about 3.5% of women and about 2% of men. The best known one is actually anorexia. That's about 1% of women, extremely low body weight.
It also has to be associated with a disturbance in the way that you perceive your body. And usually somebody with anorexia nervosa is maintaining their low weight by an extreme degree of dietary restriction.
And that's also where you see the fatalities. And another pretty well-known one is, of course, bulimia.
And those symptoms are when folks are eating really large amounts of food while they're feeling out of control and then trying to get rid of those calories by using vomiting or laxatives or diuretics or maybe fasting for long periods of time or exercising as a way specifically to try to get rid of those calories.
So thankfully, the prevalence of bulimia is actually low, maybe 1 or 1.5%. But there's another broader category called disordered eating. So this includes the eating disorders we just described, but it can also include people who maybe don't fit all the criteria for these eating disorders, but who still engage in some of the behaviors. And that's a lot more people, maybe 14 to 22% of the public.
I have to say that based on just like talking to my friends and stuff, I would have thought it was so much higher because to me, it seemed so normal.
How so?
I mean, I think it was pretty normal for people, if they felt like they overate, to not eat the next day or overexercise. That was something totally normal. Like, I never thought there was anything wrong with what I was doing.
Let me ask you, if you don't mind, like, on the days that you did binge, like the next day, what did you actually do at that point?
When it first started, I would start maybe to eat a little less the next day, but then it would be like, I can't eat anything until dinner the next day, or I'm going to try to burn 800 calories on the treadmill. And the more and more I binged, the more and more drastic my compensatory behaviors had to become. So eventually, I just felt like everything was out of my control.
And you know cognitively that this is not healthy. So what do you make of that?
It's kind of hard for people to understand because an eating disorder isn't really like a rational way of thinking. It was more like I knew what I was doing was bad, but there was no other way to be because I was so desperate to not gain weight. So I think it has a lot more to do with the thoughts I had.
And what thoughts in particular?
Definitely the thoughts about how important my perception of my body is to my self-esteem.
Uh-huh.
Jenny Thomas calls this overvaluation of shape and weight.
And what that means is if you think about your self-esteem like a pie chart, right, and you think about all the things that have to be going well in your life for you to feel successful and to feel good about yourself, the ideal pie chart for somebody with healthy self-esteem would be kind of like a stock portfolio that's diversified where you'd have a lot of different pie slices.
I love the pie slices. Like for me, I'm picturing I want to be a good dad. I want to do well in my career. I want to have a good level of physical fitness. I want some good family relationships.
Yeah, so for someone with an eating disorder,
somebody's pie chart can become so skewed that it's almost exclusively made up of just their shape and weight. And so that number on the scale can define their mood for the day, how they feel about themselves, how successful they feel as a human being.
This was definitely true for me. So if I woke up and I weighed myself and I weighed more that day, the entire day would be ruined.
Just because of that number.
Oh, yeah. And then on the flip side, if I weighed less a day, then I'd be like, oh my God, yes, I look so much skinnier today. Like, this all makes so much sense. But it's like, of course, I probably looked the same from day to day to day.
So what I'm hearing from all of this is that it's really crucial, this whole like body image piece, it's really a crucial part of these disorders. Like, I remember growing up and, you know, there were magazines, of course, you'd look at slim models, TV shows, but I cannot imagine today with Instagram models that you're just seeing like an edited vision. Everyone else seems perfect.
And then in the case of somebody with an eating disorder or somebody at risk, they're going to compare themselves unfavorably always to all of those things and then feel even worse.
I'm definitely guilty of this myself, logging onto Instagram, seeing how I look.
See how other people look, see how other people are eating and compare themselves to that. You know, and of course, everything that everyone else is posting on social media, you know, they're picking the most flattering photos, their mason jar full of salad or whatnot that makes them look so healthy. They might not be posting the other parts of their life that they're not wanting to showcase.
So, Yuna, let's talk about what an eating disorder looks like. One of the problems with eating disorders is that even like your parents, doctors, friends, we have certain assumptions about what a person with an eating disorder looks like. We're thinking of that anorexic individual.
This is exactly what happened to me when I went to see my endocrinologist. He like looked at my hormones and he was like, ha ha ha, you have the hormones of somebody anorexic. Why would your hormones be this way? It's so funny. And I was like, this isn't that funny.
So your body, the way your body looked was not befitting that of an anorexic person.
Basically, what he was insinuating was like, you don't look like you're anorexic. You don't look like you're dieting. You don't look very, very skinny.
But were you restricting at that point?
At that point, once a month, I literally wasn't eating for 3 days. Like, I was just drinking water. And he didn't even bother asking, like, have you engaged in restrictive eating behaviors? Like, are you eating normally?
But the labs didn't lie.
Exactly.
That's really unfortunate. And I think that the care that would be optimal would be to ask about your relationship with food. Because otherwise, I think disordered eating will be invisible to doctors.
Right? I mean, it's kind of invisible to everyone because if you're binge eating, it's when you're alone. It's never in front of people.
You're hiding it.
Yeah, you're always hiding it because it's something that's like very shameful, right? Or like if I was going to parties or something and I wasn't eating, like I would just get a plate of food to look like I was eating and then I would sneakily throw it away when nobody was looking.
Huh.
And like people would make comments sometimes like at dinner, they'd be like, how many calories are in your dinner? 30, because it would just be like a plate of tomatoes. And I'd be like, oh yeah, I already ate before or whatever. Like I'd make up some lie.
So, you know, hearing about all of these behaviors, it's actually kind of crazy to think that they're not even just isolated to people with diagnosable eating disorders. Food is just so powerful in our society, and it's so easy to engage in these disordered eating patterns.
A lot of people will use binge eating in particular as a way of escape from a negative mood. And we know from research studies that actually binge eating tends to be predicted by rising levels of negative mood prior to the episode, and then actually negative mood tends to decrease after the episode.
Yuna, just as you described, it begins with the restrictive eating, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then let's say you have a bad day or something didn't go quite right. You've got this way of coping. You binge.
Yeah. And when it was happening, I wouldn't really feel better. I would just feel less bad and kind of numb. But then afterwards, I would just feel so much worse.
Well, it turns out that restriction is one of the biggest predictors of developing an eating disorder.
For many people, dieting might be harmless. You know, many of us are just going to kind of give up the diet at the end of the day or the week, but some people are going to really persistently follow it and start cutting back further and further, that they're going to develop anorexia nervosa. Some people will do that for a time and then they're going to find that they can't stand the dieting and develop binge eating because they're so deprived of those foods and they're so hungry. So it just affects people in so many different ways. And in general, I think our society would be a lot better off if we had a lot less dieting.
Unfortunately, dieting is something that Americans do a lot of.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get back to that after this short break. So, Yuna, most Americans at some point are on a diet.
Mm-hmm.
But let's be clear. Most people who try dieting don't end up with an eating disorder.
No, like we shouldn't fear-monger and be like, if you go on a diet, you'll get an eating disorder.
No.
But over 95% of people who have an eating disorder have had a very restrictive past. And it's also important to remember that certain behaviors are definitely a red flag. Like fasting, unless it's for religious reasons, probably a red flag, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or like over-exercising to compensate, probably a red flag.
And here's another red flag. Think about all those food-related health fads that everyone talks about these days. Jenny Thomas at Harvard Medical School says even that can be a precursor to an eating disorder.
It's interesting, too, because I think dieting used to be something that was very kind of cool and acceptable, like back in the 80s and 90s. And now people don't talk about going on diets as much. They talk about, oh, I'm making a lifestyle change. I'm like paleo for life, or I'm clean eating forever, you know, so as opposed to these one-off diets. But whatever you call it, it's like dieting in disguise.
So what's interesting, instead of restricting the amount of foods you're eating, you're restricting the types of foods. And that can actually lead to something that's now being called orthorexia. It starts with someone who's just trying to, quote, eat clean, cut out the sugar, cut out the processed food, the diet in disguise.
Yeah, for sure. This is Kristen Yavaris, a clinical psychologist at McLean Hospital.
Oftentimes, people become very uncomfortable with even the thought of eating foods that don't meet their definition of healthy. That can become problematic due to quality more than quantity per se. And it's associated with being focused on a relatively broad definition of healthy eating, and it may narrow over time so that over time they're excluding more and more foods and becoming more and more uncomfortable with eating foods that they don't deem healthy. And so there's often a progression.
You know, it's similar to fasting. Some people fast for spiritual reasons. You talked about that. Mm-hmm. But that's not an eating disorder.
Mm-hmm.
But if you start to fast to compensate for the overeating, like you've talked about,
mm-hmm.
that can turn into the anorexia or even that binge purge cycle.
Yeah.
So if your attempt at healthy eating has become like an obsession.
That would make it difficult to spontaneously go out to dinner if the proposed destination wouldn't be a place where you would be able to have the foods that you wanted to have. It could make it difficult to go to people's houses, and it could really end up impacting your interpersonal relationships.
I definitely felt this way for years. So I wouldn't go to restaurants that I thought like the food was unhealthy.
Mm-hmm.
And if my mom was home cooking, then I would always have to say, no, I don't want that. And like, it was so hard for me to figure out reasons for why I had to say no to things. It would hurt her feelings, and it would hurt my feelings to hurt her feelings. It was just like,
this sounds like a vicious cycle.
Yeah.
So we've talked about how to define eating disorders like anorexia and bulimia. And we've touched upon how this is occurring in a culture. It's a crazy culture. There's unrealistic beauty standards in our society. They affect women, but they also affect men. How do you define healthy eating? And this might be different for different people. But Kristen Yavara says there are three main ways to define normal as opposed to disordered eating. The first is flexibility.
So that means being able to adaptively change what one eats, being able to eat a variety of foods.
The second trait common to people who have normal eating habits.
Being able to eat because you're hungry and stop when you're full, and also eating because you enjoy it and simply for the pleasure of it. Moving to a point where one views food as a source of nourishment, both physical and emotional, and a place where food can be a pleasure rather than food as sort of a source of guilt and shame and worry.
And hardest for me to accept is that no one can always eat perfectly.
It's okay to sometimes eat more than you plan to. There is variation, and sometimes we're hungrier than we expected to be. Sometimes there's something that looks really good, and that is totally okay.
And then I think addressing some of those beliefs that really drive disordered eating is absolutely crucial. So let's go back to that pie chart.
The self-esteem pie chart.
Yes, and we want to actually get other slices on there so that you feel good about yourselves and it's not just all about your weight and your shape. For this, a lot of clinicians will help people with cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT. This is a therapy that works to crack the vicious cycle of negative thoughts, leading to negative feelings that drive unhealthy behaviors.
And the goal is to try and effectively get some distance from the thoughts and examine whether they are entirely true or there might be some alternative explanation.
So, for example, I have weighed 25 pounds less than now, and...
Were you happy?
No. So, clearly, it has nothing to do with the weight and it has everything to do with how you see yourself.
So, I know we've talked a lot about eating when you're hungry
mm-hmm.
and stopping when you're full.
Yes.
But if you're in treatment for an eating disorder... Jenny Thomas says you may have to ignore that particular advice for a little while.
If you've had an eating disorder for a long time where you've been starving yourself, you've been binging, you've been vomiting, your body doesn't really know when it's hungry or full. And so typically we'll ask folks to try to just be eating at regular intervals, you know, eat breakfast even if you're not hungry, eat lunch even if you're not hungry. And then your body can actually become entrained to become hungry at those times.
And remember when we talked about those forbidden foods?
Mm-hmm.
Jenny Thomas says sometimes having people systematically break their own food rules in a therapy session can be extremely helpful.
We have an experiment where they'll try to bring in a forbidden food and let themselves eat kind of a regular portion of it, like one brownie instead of a whole tray. And some folks have told me they've had the experience of they try the brownie and they're like, you know what? It's not even that good. I may actually prefer to have a different food.
Again, we see this idea that if you let yourself have something, it becomes a whole lot less attractive.
Yeah, I mean, this sounds like pretty cool therapy because basically you get to eat brownies in therapy, right? But yeah,
it's brownie therapy.
I think that as soon as you start to practice, like, okay, I am going to eat this food that I'm afraid to eat because I've always been out of control with it in the past, you'll just figure out that it's really not as terrifying as you thought it was.
And you could have that single peppermint star?
Yeah, and you can have the single peppermint star and not freak out and like eat the box of peppermint stars.
Yuna, you've been remarkably open about what sounds like a very trying episode or actually a prolonged period in your life of an eating disorder. Where are you now?
I think the biggest difference was when I stopped like counting everything and restricting everything. And I finally had to just try to eat normally. And like the idea of not trying to lose weight constantly was what finally kind of changed my attitude towards food and my body. And also really trying to focus on having my self-worth come from other things than just my body.
That expanded pie chart.
Yeah, that was a crazy idea. Like, I didn't realize how crazy that was until I heard Jenny Thomas say that out loud. And I was like, oh yeah, of course, that makes so much sense. Because like, my entire evaluation of everybody is always their body. Like, that's how I judge everybody because it's how I judge myself. And so shifting my thinking around that and really like thinking about, do I think less of other people because of their weight? And the answer is no. So why should I always be thinking less of myself because of my weight? And I don't know.
So how much mental energy is going into the calculations now?
Oh my God, none.
So no more that's
calculations
the freedom.
About food. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's, I mean, that's like a huge, huge relief.
Are you enjoying food at this point?
Yeah, I think I look at food differently because I'm not as afraid of food as I was. Like, I was terrified of food for a very long time.
And how did you go about getting help? How did you begin this journey back to your place of healthier eating?
So I actually found a psychologist who specialized in eating disorders, and particularly in people who had a history of very restrictive eating. And it really helped me to talk about it all out loud with her because it really made me realize that it wasn't about the food and it was more about the way I was valuing myself.
And it sounds like an ongoing evolution.
Yeah. I mean, you're always working on these things. Like, it reminds me a lot of the way people deal with addiction, where, like, you're never completely free, but you are much better at coping with the impulses you might have, I guess.
So the course of recording this podcast, I imagine, has been challenging at times for you.
Well, it's not just challenging. It's like, sometimes I think I had to do this podcast because once I had to write everything down and say everything out loud, it kind of made it obvious to me how, like, messed up certain things were, if that makes sense. And I think...
And you're sharing it very publicly as well.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely helps. And then just interviewing the experts on eating disorders really, like, pointed out to me how much of a problem I had, because I think when it's in your head, you can kind of ignore it. And then when I like had to see what they were saying about people who do have eating disorders, I was like, oh yeah, that's me. Oh yeah, that's me. Oh, I did that. Oh, I did that too.
So we can't prescribe podcasting for everyone with an eating disorder. But awareness is crucial. And if you're listening to this and you really think you're having an eating disorder, seeking out a specialist can be the difference between suffering in silence and getting better. If you want to find a clinician, you can go to nationaleatingdisorders.org. Or if you're not sure if you have one, you can take a quick survey at EAT-26.org. It's a simple 26-item questionnaire to give you some feedback about whether you need to seek further help.
And I just want to say that the reason I really, really wanted to make this episode is because I was definitely one of the people to think that eating disorders were something that happened to other people. But I think if you just take 5 seconds to take the survey, it's not going to hurt you in any way, and it could only help you. And if you really do need to seek help, then it's important to do that as fast as possible instead of letting it get out of control.
So, Yuna, we've been talking quite a lot about body image and self-image as they relate to eating disorders, but I think there's more to explore on this topic.
Yeah, so if you don't have an eating disorder, your self-image and body image can definitely still fuel some really self-destructive behaviors.
You can have a body image. You can look at yourself and say, my body looks like this, but my self-image, I am a good person. It's time to start taking care of myself like a good person, and then watch what happens.
We'll be back in 2 weeks with a brand new episode on body image and self-image.
This is going to be our final episode of our first season. It's an extra special episode. You do not want to miss this, so we will be back in 2 weeks.
Food, We Need to Talk is a production of WBUR.
Our editor and producer is George Hicks.
Our supervising editor is Elizabeth Harrison. Our executive producer is Carrie Goldberg.
With editorial and technical support from Catherine Brewer, Paul Vitkus, and the WBUR iLab. I'm Una Jada.
And I'm Dr. Eddie Phillips. If you like the podcast, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a rating and a review.
It really helps us reach more listeners, and it's free.
And don't forget to follow us on
Instagram.
That's our online home at Food We Need to Talk.
And since we have a whole 2 weeks until we are reunited, you have so much time to fill out our listener survey, wbur.org/foodsurvey, and let us know if you want to hear a season 2 and what you want to hear on it. wbur.org/foodsurvey. Eddie, see you in 2 weeks.
See you then.